Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball, it's Gerard Gilroy. Now, before you dive into this podcast, there are plenty of ways to build an acca. Some people stick with the favourites, some are convinced they've cracked it, others less sure once the final result goes sideways. However you do it, William Hill lets you boost your football acca, giving you more back when it comes good. Just build the acca you want with four or more legs and William Hill will boost your winnings depending on the number of selections. The boost is applied automatically and shown right there in your bet slip, so you know exactly what you're getting. Whether it's a quiet midweek fixture or a big weekend of football, it's a simple way to get more out of every acca you place. Download the app or visit William Hill to get started today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, back to the podcast.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Northern Ireland hadn't seen a gold medal for 52 years and then four come along at once, and all from different, like Ireland and Great Britain. I think that's really cool.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Arthur O'Dea is with me in studio. Arthur, happy new year. Can I say it?
Go on. Yeah, you can. Yeah,
fire away. Okay, happy new year, Arthur.
Happy new year.
Happy bit between Christmas and new year. Have you enjoyed the sporting time off? There wasn't as much of it as it's just been all football and darts. Really,
has just
it?
Been all football and darts. Yeah, yeah. It's been pretty tame though. It's been even the Stevens Day. Like, obviously, had a vested interest in the United Villa game, United Newcastle game, even.
Yeah.
But even that kind
poor
of felt,
game.
It felt a li- it was poor, but it felt a little bit, there was more effort required than kind of just like, sitting down into this, now great. Because it just came at, it was too late in the day.
Yeah.
It was like half five, like, it would have been great, yeah. So it's been kind of mixed. It's been oddly, it's not been very sporting Christmas at all.
I saw a good bit of conversation about the absence of Boxing Day Premier League football, for what the, as the English would call it, as like a real attack on football's heritage, which I wasn't expecting. I didn't expect there to be a sort of, but basically it's almost like there's been a Christmas round taking out because of its proximity to the weekend and because of all the extra European fixtures and so on. And it is an interesting thought that it is basically, it's almost like a birthright for the 50% chance you might have to have a home game on Stephen's Day, that you get to go to football if you're a football fan at on Boxing Day. But I did miss it, I have to say, just as a general thing. But the game tonight, like Manchester United home to Wolves, that's a big one. That's the quarter past eight game.
Yeah, yeah, the quarter past eight game. Yeah.
The Villa Arsenal game is genuine.
Yeah, yeah.
It is interesting to me as a Villa fan who tries not to talk about it as much as I do and fails miserably. But it is interesting to see, to have that sort of sense of excitement around one of our fixtures from the general football public rather than just from myself.
Yeah.
It does feel as though there's sort of something coming tonight. And I think that might be an Arsenal victory, but even that in itself feels a bit big time. As in, like, this is a huge game for Arsenal. This is going to be season defining for them.
But see, do you still believe, if Villa win tonight,
mm-hmm.
do you believe that it's like, there'll be level points with Arsenal? So then are you like, well, now it's a title challenge. Now it's on. Now it's sincerely on.
Maybe you can start to dream to a certain extent, but I don't think they're going to win the league. You know, like,
yeah.
So what I see with Villa is, I'll have an argument with you to death about the obsession with the XG people, say, because I think there's such a lack of taking football as the fluid entity it is. And
you're anti-XG.
I'm not anti-XG. I'm anti this idea that Villa should be 15th in the table, or that they're massively overperforming their XG in a way that is unsustainable, or is, you know, I think people vary from like it being all luck to it being a massive overperformance that has to level out. But what I'm talking about, like, I always think that, like, circumstances of games and a way a team plays and various things are, as well as, like, you know, if you're scoring loads of goals from outside the box that are 0.03 XG, perhaps that's something that you've identified as a, when Arsenal do it from corners, they've identified as, you know, an opportunity in football, whereas when a lesser team does it, it's pure fluke, you know. So, but I'll have arguments with you all day on that. What I would look to is 7 wins in a row or 6 wins in a row that are by one goal, and say that just by, again, maybe this is just backing up the XG point, I think by the law of averages, that form, the wins will peter off, and Villa are in a battle every single time they go out there in a way that City certainly aren't, and I think Arsenal, once they hit form again, aren't. It's not to say that they can't push them, but I just don't think they're good enough to be there every week. But it also doesn't in any way diminish, I think, from this run. which is exciting and something to enjoy on its own as well, without it also... It shouldn't always be about where you end up in May, you know?
You almost don't have the pressure of it.
Yeah.
Because there's no expectation on them, I think, reasonably. But I do find it interesting because it's like really interesting about perception. So you know they had obviously had a terrible start. Was it like their fifth game was their first win or something?
Yeah.
I wonder, say if they'd won games...
Didn't win for five games, yeah.
Well, say if they'd won games 1-3-5.
Yeah.
And then dropped two games off somewhere in this run. And they were
the
there
same
on
points,
that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do wonder, because it does feel like it's like that hot hand thing. It's like, well, this has to stop. And then you kind of assume... Because it'd be really interesting. It's like when they eventually lose again, and it will happen.
Yeah.
How they do in the next game after that. And I don't think that's necessarily indicative of anything. But and I'm not sure. I'd probably agree with you in terms of the league. But it's really hard to get a measure of how good a team is while they're in this kind of moment, you know. It's kind of because it doesn't, it just is very, very difficult. It's
but
like
their results form has generally been fantastic outside of those five games, because even before they went on this winning run, they had gone on a couple of winning runs and so on. And I think it might be up to, you know, and it's eight Premier League wins in a row. It's not seven Premier League wins in a row in those 10 games. Obviously, three of them were in Europe as well. So it does need to be kind of taken into account that this is an ongoing, long-term thing. Aston Villa in the Premier League table in the game since Emery has took over, which is like 150-odd games or something like that, are fourth by miles, with no one near them above them or no one near them below them. You know, they're miles ahead of Newcastle, Chelsea and United, and they're a good bit behind City, Arsenal and Liverpool. You know, they're just fourth out there on their own. So this is a long-term sustained thing at this stage, you know. So how they do it, I suppose, is causing Villa fans a lot of anger, and it's causing a lot of the data community a lot of anger as well. And maybe we could meet somewhere in the middle that says, ultimately, you look at things like goal difference and so on, and you have to think there is something there that will level off. But it's not to say that them losing the XG meant that they didn't deserve to beat United or Chelsea in the last couple of games.
No, and I do think it's a bit... It's funny, I remember watching highlights earlier in the season of Bournemouth-West Ham. And I think it finished 2-2 at Bournemouth. And something like West Ham, I think, had single-digit shots, single figure. I think Bournemouth had 28. And you're like, if ever kind of, in that kind of scenario, you see like, so I suppose something like XG is like, oh, this would tell you a different story of how this game went. And it's not really kind of indicative of anything.
Yeah.
But it's quite funny that since then, it's quite funny that it's like almost the opposite. Like Bournemouth, I think now are like 9 or 10 games without a win.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of tailored off. It doesn't really, I think I go back to your point with the thing about the sort of intangibles.
Yeah.
But what
was the story of that game? Because
Bournemouth battered them.
But what was the, I know what it is, I remember it, because I had Bournemouth, I got knocked out in the last three of a last man standing, I was in the last three of last man standing, I had Bournemouth. West Ham went 2-0 up.
Yeah.
And that defines everything that happens.
It just is so funny.
Do you know what I mean? And it's obviously Bournemouth have all the incentive and all that. And like the XG of a game like that doesn't matter.
No.
You know, it really is irrelevant because the circumstances of the game say that West Ham are holding on to a lead. And they're protecting a lead and then eventually you're protecting a result.
Yeah. It's funny, not to go back to, like, bring everything back to Man United, but they're obviously the stats to be the closest to, but it was funny even at the start of the season where a lot of people were getting very excited about their XG. Because it was very high. And then you go back and you're like, I forget the exact details of it were, but it was a similar sort of thing where it was like the Arsenal game. Arsenal went ahead, United at home, so they're chasing that for the rest of that game. Don't score, whatever. Even the Chelsea one down to 10 men for a lot of the game. And it didn't really tell a full picture. Burnley at home, all these kind of games. I'd be with you. I'd be
and it's fine
you.
As an indicator.
It
it's
is
fine.
An it's
given for what it is, for what it's even supposed to be as a stat. It's given so much prominence. It's absolutely ludicrous. Like
if you get a penalty, you get a penalty at the edge of the box, and all of a sudden that's pretty much a one. I think I don't know. It's slightly lower than one, whatever with the penalty, whatever way it goes, how it's taken. But like you could do nothing for the rest of the match.
Yeah.
But like it's all of us. So yeah. I know what you mean. I don't think, but I think that's very interesting. The 150 and the long term thing. Like it doesn't really feel like the Villa thing's built on sand at all.
But it does make tonight very interesting because Villa have a really good record against Arsenal. Arsenal sense them as their bogey team. Owen will tell you that when he's in this seat. But Arsenal have a huge incentive this evening, and like they should have wrapped things up against Brighton at the weekend. and made life difficult for themselves.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've been kind of, they've been winning unimpressively, I would say, over Christmas. I think Arsenal need a big night tonight. Like, and if I'm trying to take my Villa hat on and just thinking of it as, are you going to win the league? You shouldn't have lost at Villa Park when City already had. You know, that was a big test, and they did. Now they have to go and beat Villa at the Emirates and then go from there and sort of take, you know, don't let City end this week on top of the table because you've had a hard run of fixtures at Christmas and they haven't. I just think things like, all these little markers. Arsenal have markers along the way that early in the season they were hitting. And I think they've stopped hitting them. And this is a huge one tonight. So this, it's a fascinating match. The darts, though, have been kind of taken over, I have to say. They've filled a void in a way that they do, for me anyway, more and more every year. Like, so every year I become more and more into this. I'm getting to know the characters better. There's new characters coming along. The commentary, I think, is fantastic. The atmosphere, obviously. And then you'll say, I'm going to be into this all year. And then, you know, come the Grand Prix or whatever is up next, I'll just say, I'll just wait till next Christmas.
Premier League's in Amsterdam this weekend. Thursday evening. You're busy on Thursday evenings anyway.
I am, yeah. But it was brilliant. And it has been... Every night has been dramatic. It's an unbelievably dramatic sport, you know, in the way it's played and the set play and so on. But the Littler Cross game last night was just fantastic. But I think everyone will have heard this by now, but we should just play it. Luke Littler did not get, I suppose, the reception that he's used to at the Ali Pally last night. And, you know, you didn't think that he was going to... react to it. I didn't think he had been reacting to it. He's sort of playing along. You can tell that he's a little bit kind of rattled, but this isn't going to be a story. And then he does his post-match interview with Sky.
Just sum up how you're feeling. It's a bit of a hostile environment out here. What's going through your head, Luke?
I'm not bothered, really. I'm not bothered. Really not bothered. Can I just say one thing? You guys pay for tickets and you're paying for my prize money, so thank you. Thank you for my money. Thank you for booing me. Thank you. Come on!
Yeah. You mentioned this to me and I noticed it as well and actually rewound it to make sure I had it right, but when I went back to the Sky studio, Wayne Mardell, who'd been on commentary, was there, wanted to talk about the interview and was quickly cut off.
Which itself felt pointed that he was there. I was thinking, because they didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe they suspected something, but they didn't know it was going to happen because it's just, they do it all the time. And then I was like, oh, he's back in studio. So like, oh, that's interesting. He says, I don't know where, like, I presume it's a pretty short walk. It doesn't usually happen.
Literally right beside it, yeah. No, I did think it was surprising that he was there, but my conspiracy side didn't come into that. But they shut down the conversation and then he goes, yeah, I know, but tried to explain it. And then she shut it down again.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why, but then Sky put it out as a clip, so it's not as if they're trying to hide it.
I couldn't believe it.
On social media. Yeah.
Because it's like, you're watching at the moment, you're like, oh, that'll do big numbers. A lot of people are going to be talking about that. and it's like, I suspect they must have been tight on time, though God knows for what, because they're playing out
if you're
like,
tight on time, just play that.
Yeah,
just talk about that. Don't talk about anything
I don't
else.
Even know what they'd be tight on time for. Like, they just play out best ofs from the other thing. Like, they could go an extra half hour if they wanted, I'm sure. Or a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I've no idea what the motivation behind it was. And I don't know, do you have any theories? I think it was Emma Patton and thinking, I don't think it's her fault necessarily.
No,
she seemed like she was told.
It felt in her ear,
But why would they not want to talk about that? Because it wasn't, we heard a bit there, like, it's not crazy, he didn't go mad. He got, like, he was obviously a bit rattled.
Like, okay, so, there's a side that is, like, negative and a side that's positive. The negative side is, let's not draw attention to the fact that our darts golden goose has just gone off the deep end a little bit. And to be honest, the future of Sky Sports darts relies on Luke Littler being a bit of a superstar.
Yeah.
The positive side is they said, oh, he's lost the head a little bit there. He's only a kid. Let's not overly draw attention to that. He'll probably come out in the press conference and talk that down and we'll pretend it never happened and we'll move on. And it was before they realised that was impossible.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hope it's the positive side. My guess would be it's the other way. It's the, we can't have him as the bad guy. It might affect how good he is for a start. If he's someone that is rattled by a crowd being negative towards him, then, although he played bloody brilliantly in that game. You know, that's the thing. It felt like he was struggling, and then you see all the stats, and he had like 106 average. And, I mean, there was one, he was under pressure, and it was like the second last leg of the game. And I think he hit like this, the most beautiful kind of, he was obviously leaving himself on a finish, so he couldn't go 180, but it was like middle of the 60. I think it was treble seven. And it was just leaving himself with tops or whatever. And he was like, whoa, there's just no playing this guy. Like when he's on fire, he is, you know. But Phil Taylor was, I won't use the word I want to use, but Phil Taylor was an unlikable chap. But he was unbelievably popular with the Ali Pally crowd.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one Phil Taylor. Taylor was clear. This is the first time that happened. And I don't know if it was a sign of a bigger thing at all, other than I think it was the end of the night. It's a fairly drunk crowd. Rob Cross is a popular character. They wanted a bit of a match.
Yeah.
And I think Littler reacted to it a little bit. And it ended up being, it was kind of, you were kind of getting a little bit behind Cross at the end, because he'd really made a battle out of this game where he had no right to do so. And I think he overreacted, but I also think it's because he's a young, he looks 38, so we forget that he's 18. But you really do, even, and it's not even the way he looks, Arthur. It's the way he talks, the way he does the interviews. He's not
just a fella. He's a fella, like.
But then he goes on the, like, that's totally in his head then, and he reacts in a way that I think was trying to be, oh, I'm not bothered, I'll have a laugh with the crowd back to them, but comes across as incredibly, like, pathetic. And therefore, I think, you know, he's made a bad misjudgment, but he's done so because he's 18, he's never been in this position before, and he didn't really know what he was doing. And I don't, it's not to always make a child out of somebody or make, you know, make excuses for that. Like, he's 18, he's not like a baby, but at the same time, he's 18.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think your point is right about the, I definitely remember 2 years ago, or whenever it was, like when Humphreys won. And God knows, I don't know who he was playing. It was an earlier game where he nearly lost. And he came back and the crowd had obviously been on him. And he went right over to the far side of the stage to give it back to the crowd who were there. So I think everyone gets it. I do think it's like common. Yeah. And he'll know that. But I don't know why. I don't know why it would have rattled him. Because as you're saying, like, so there was a chance for Cross. Cross had a dart to level it up a three.
Yeah.
And missed. So it was closer than probably the scores suggested in terms of like the match.
Yeah.
It's funny, back to the XG thing again.
But that wasn't down to Littler not showing up.
No.
That was because it was, he's also the seeding system in darts is bananas, right? So the number one seed, it lasts 32 and it's seeded. Yeah. And the number one seed plays the 17 seed.
Yeah. It was a shame. Rob Cross is better than a lot of players.
But also, Rob Cross is really screwed by that. He should be playing the 16 seed.
He's a lot better than players left.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. It's bizarre, but maybe it's a kind of keeping the viewers engaged.
Yeah,
I wasn't missing that. But the overall, I don't know. It was very strange to see him because he did look, you know, the way for the last 2 years, even though he lost the Humphreys final, like he's pretty much looked indestructible and like untouchable. It's like this guy's just like, and he did kind of still play that way.
It was the Rob Cross game 2 years ago that made him. That was sort of like the game that was like, oh, this is for real. This isn't just a fairy tale run. Like,
But maybe there's a, because if I was watching it, so Luke Humphreys will obviously be watching. There's a lot more to games to go, but presumably that'll be the final, all things being equal. I presume it's 1 and 2. but that, geez, if I was Humphreys, like you'd be, there's something to explore there from opponent's point of view. There's definitely something to explore. Now, it didn't, Mardell said it afterwards as well. It's like, he might have lost his head, but he still somehow managed to control it. So he lost it after the thing was done.
It didn't affect his darts,
Which is like, oh, Jesus.
I do hope it doesn't make him a villain of the Ali Pally, you know?
I don't think anyone is. Like, there's no like outright villain, is there? Like, even like Price is getting kind of celebrated now, even though I always kind of think that's semi-ironic.
It's just because he lost.
They like me now because I'm not as good as I was. But like, nobody's an outright villain, is it? Like, nobody's kind of...
I just wonder if there is a turn on him. He's after accelerating it.
Oh, they'll come back at him again.
He's after accelerating that now.
Now they'll come back at him again.
And kind of for no reason, but I just hope that there's somewhat of a maturity among, like, a group of...
Yeah, maybe.
Not the most renowned mature fans in the world to realise, though, that it was an overreaction.
They're you know, crowd.
It wasn't the end of the world.
I think there'll be a reaction. So there'll be something. I don't know when he's out probably.
He's out on New Year's Day.
Great. Yeah. And it's probably a game he'll probably win. It's probably going to be an easier game for him.
It is, yeah. By seedings, anyway, it will be, yeah.
You do wonder, yeah. I think they'll definitely give him a bit, but it'll probably be a procession, which is harder to get a... All the stuff is so funny, though, because I always find it so kind of jarring, even though there was one point there where he was... he peeled off to the right or the left, I'm not sure which way it was, and just going, what, to the crowd? Like, what are you doing?
You're
calling, like, these boys out, like...
I find the whole atmosphere is bizarre. They're sitting there, like, playing darts as the crowd are chanting on the floor, arguing with each other, not watching the darts. You know, like, the shouting out at the other tables and all. And it's just like, they're all like, they're just like maintaining their focus. But yet they're riled up by the crowd in every way, good and bad. And they're constantly like playing to them and giving them the fists and everything like that. And it's like, you either tune them out or you don't. I don't know. There's a unique ecosystem with the players and the crowd that I think exists in no other sport in the world.
I'd love to know what the sound is like from there.
Yeah.
How it carries. Because I presume it's a sort of stage thing. So... does it come? I don't know what way the acoustics work with that.
Good to go. David Wilson was there. We might ask him when he's back in the office.
So was Matthew Brennan. Oh, he was there last night?
No, earlier in the tournament, okay. I think.
But, yeah, Matthew was there as well. Did a full day. How does this sound to you? He did a full day. Did two sessions.
Yeah.
I presume this is... I can tell the story. No, a little bit further back.
Okay.
They flew in that morning. Right, just think about this now. They flew in that morning, I think about an 8 o'clock flight. So they land, whatever, into London, half nine. Walk over, but get over to the Ali Pali for whatever time. I presume you're in around 12 for the start. In there, there's a little break in between, so you have to go out and come back in around 5:30 or
different
so.
Different tickets, kind of. Yeah, okay.
So they did the boat. You're back in again for the 7 or whatever. All through till 11 o'clock or whatever. Out again, flight back 6 o'clock that morning. Not staying anywhere. All on the go, 24 hours.
It sounds like I'm a good 20 years older than Matthew and glad of it. At this stage, I'm not sure I wouldn't have done it 20 years ago.
There's so many crucial points. We were kind of talking about that point in the mid sessions interval.
How do you get that?
You need
bit
to
of
nail
energy.
That. You yeah. need to get a good feed. You kind of do not keep drinking at that point.
But like, at some point, you just want, like, yeah, the really bigging yourself to go back for it and still care about the darts.
With the same enthusiasm.
To still care about the darts. I was at the darts one time in Birmingham on a stag, and it was like the first night of the stag, so we'd been kind of drinking since the airport that morning.
Yeah, Jesus.
And like, it was only the Premier League, like it was Thursday night, but like, to try and care about the darts,
I know.
Was like very far down the list. So I know you're kind of going, oh, we're in the wrong place if you're not actually paying attention. We should be somewhere else. So look, that's a conversation for another day. Before, we're going to go to a break and get John Bruin up and chat to him about the football, right? But before we do, I had one more thing sporting wise I did over Christmas.
Oh yeah.
I went to the cinema to see Saipan.
Right.
You haven't seen it yet?
No. Probably won't.
I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I have no idea. I sat through the 2 hours or whatever, and I just don't know what I think about this film. I don't think I've ever been more confused about whether I like something or not. I think ultimately I didn't. But I don't know if I could. I don't know if I'm... Like, I was 17 when Saipan happened.
Oh, okay.
Like, I was as obsessed with something as you could possibly be.
Yeah.
I've read every book that's come out since that's been around it. I've been every little civil war that happened up until, like, we were having them up until Keane left United in 2005.
It's your JFK assassination.
It sort of is, you know? And it's funny, when I saw the trailer, one thing I said to Owen, who had seen... he'd seen the screener, I couldn't make it. So I literally, the first time I saw it was in the cinema there, was when he saw the trailer, I was like, Saipan is the biggest thing to happen in this country for loads of different reasons. I'm not like the biggest thing, but it is a huge cultural moment that is really, really important in this country. But you show a film about it, and it's very hard to not just make it a thing where something happened at a football tournament. And so it's impossible to almost recreate how big it actually was. Now, funnily enough, they did that well.
Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball, it's Gerard Gilroy. Now, before you dive into this podcast, there are plenty of ways to build an ACCA. Some people stick with the favourites, some are convinced they've cracked it, others less sure once the final result goes sideways. However you do it, William Hill lets you boost your football ACCA, giving you more back when it comes good. Just build the ACCA you want with four or more legs and William Hill will boost your winnings depending on the number of selections. The boost is applied automatically and shown right there in your bet slip so you know exactly what you're getting. Whether it's a quiet midweek fixture or a big weekend of football, it's a simple way to get more out of every ACCA you place. Download the app or visit William Hill to get started today. It's over 18s only. Gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, back to the podcast.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It felt like a big deal. They use an awful lot of real news coverage.
Yeah, I heard
so
that.
A lot of voiceover, a lot of like the first voice you hear the first voice you hear in the film might be, I think it might be like Anya Lawler, and then it's like Jerry Ryan, and then it's Pat Kenny.
Okay.
Do you know, like there's a lot of Jerry Ryan in there actually, you know. But it's all like TV3 with the old logo, the old blue logo, doing vox pops on the streets, and everybody having the opinion. And it's a lot of real footage in there that they intersperse throughout the film. Like Tommy Gorman is asking, the real Tommy Gorman is asking the fake Roy Keane questions, you know, in later on in the film. So all of that stuff does it very well, I would say. I think it does actually capture what it meant to us and how big a deal it was. Other stuff, it's hard not to get worried about the inaccuracies. But if I go to, my wife is a history nut. She has a like degree in history. And like, we went to see a screening of Michael Collins a few years ago. You know, it was just on, they were showing it in the cinema for a weekend or whatever. And I was like, you can't, I don't care. I mean, stop telling me all the things that are different about it.
Yeah.
It's a movie. It's not like every minute doesn't have to be right. And I'm very much on the opposite side of this one. I can't deal with the, there's a FAI figure.
I like, heard about
this. Who's a comedy character. Yeah. His name is Dickie Maloney. Right? And he's just this like, this like over the top, like Irish paddy drunkard, like, you know, Schlieveen.
Ruddy right? faced, was he?
You know, it's like, say what you want about the FAI. This man has never existed, certainly not at the top of the organisation. Après Match used to do FAI characters and they weren't as they weren't as much of a parody as this fellow was, like, you know. So like a lot of that stuff is in there. It's just like, but I think the biggest thing that they miss is the actors are very good. And Aina Hardwick in particular, like, I mean, he nails Roy Keane. Like, he really got... And it's a caricature of Keane. And I think we see it more. You know, if you listen to their podcast every week, you're spending an hour and a half with him a week. It's all performative and it's on the show and you're watching. But it's still a lot of time with someone. You see how he's interacting with people.
Yeah.
And I just don't ever buy that he wasn't able to sit in a room with people or he wasn't able to...
Yeah.
I'd say there was times when he was locked himself away in a room while they were having a party. He didn't want to be part of that, but he still was able to go to breakfast the next morning. Do you know what I mean? I don't buy that. But that's fine. And I think if you were ever to find a time in Keane's life where he was wound up to 90 and was the closest to that, I think it probably was 2002. So even that's fine. I think it misses on Mick McCarthy. I think it misses on who Mick McCarthy is. I think it's a portrayal of him as somebody who is a little bit bitter under the surface about all the credit that Keane's getting over what him and the team are getting. But the way he deals with that is in a very kind of sheepish way and in a very kind of like unconfident and until I have to react because you forced me into a corner to react way, as opposed to somebody like Mick McCarthy's an incredibly self-confident person.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever felt like he was in the wrong or out of, like, you know, out of his depth in any way. And I kind of feel like this guy is a little bit out of his depth. So I feel like it misses on McCarthy in that way.
Do they, are they able, because obviously there's time constraints, are they able to capture who he is? Like, I don't know how much time they're given to...
Yeah.
All the like, so, like, because it is funny, like, when we think about it now, it, like, it there's a distinct period between then and the Charlton era, but, like, it ended 7 years earlier. Like, I know his
career is over. Sorry, so I actually was going to tell you something else that I'll tell you now, but there's another bit that I forgot. The Jack Charlton character in this book, he's not in it, but he's talked about as in he's McCarthy's god. So when Mick McCarthy checks into his crappy hotel in Saipan, he puts a framed picture of Jack Charlton.
Stop.
Yeah, and talks to him throughout the film. Like, says, what are we going to do now, boss? You know, like, and...
That can't be true.
Of course it's not. I don't think so. Anyway, Roy and Mick have a conversation. Like, Jack's alive and well in 2002, by the way, you know? Roy and Mick have a conversation. Roy and Mick have a conversation where, on the plane, in the toilet, by the way, which I presume didn't happen either, where I know, yeah, it's a much bigger, obviously, a stage bathroom from an airplane, unless they were on a much better plane than they gave it credit for. So he talks about him, talks about Jack, Mick McCarthy does, in a defensive way, and Roy says, Jack Charlton was an English lad, he used to pat Irish lads on the head. You know, and it's like, okay, come on now. But to answer your original question, they use a lot of real footage of Keane, which actually, at the start of the film, takes you out a little bit because then you're seeing a man who doesn't really look like him at all.
Yeah, that's a weird thing.
I didn't think that was great, but it does set up who Roy Keane was.
Yeah.
And how big a figure he was, Manchester United and so on. But with Mick, he's having a conversation with his wife. They're in a hotel in Dublin right before they fly off. And he's wearing, I recognise it immediately as the Italian 90 tracksuit. You know, the kind of suit with the kind of lightning white
exactly
lines through it, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is he wearing that? And then he takes it off and he's wearing an Italian 90 jersey. And they have a conversation. The wife's like, you can't wear that, it's dirty. He goes, this mud is, you know, this battles of war, you know, the scars of war and all this. And he said, did you know that I was, and he literally says to his wife, did you know that I haven't worn this since the World Cup in 1990? And she went, oh yeah, it looks like it. And she goes, yeah. Do you know who the person was with the most fouls in that tournament? Me. You know, it's like...
So they set him up as a kind of...
Yeah, there's another time where they have an interview with him he's doing an interview where somebody, like some incredibly pushy reporter, is sitting in his house but like talking to him about how he's nothing without Roy Keane, kind of, you know, in an unbelievably unrealistic way, and talks to him about the fight they had in 1992. There's a lot of stuff like that that just annoys me. There's a... Paul Kimmage... has turned into a woman in her early 30s for this.
I heard that as well.
It's a composite character, so it's not just Paul Kimmage, it's also someone else. They created that. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that's just a bit jarring, a bit movie-ish. You know, like think of like another Irish movie like that has loads of upsides and loads of downsides, like Veronica Guerin. Yeah. You know, when you watch that film, it's like there's an awful lot of that. There's an awful lot of like, right, you're paying attention to this character and this character, but everybody around them seems incredibly fake. The rest of the team, the only characters that have any speaking lines are like Stephen Reed and Jason McAteer. And everybody, everyone just seems like an idiot. Niall Quinn's in there as well. And they're just like useless idiots.
No
actual real character to them whatsoever. Quinn a little bit, they play up like Keane thinks he should be on his side and he's like, I am standing up, I'm telling you to sit down. You know what I mean? There's a tiny bit to Quinn, but everybody else has like nothing to them whatsoever. You know, so that, like, again, I am coming down more negative than I mean to, because the reason that I said at the start of the conversation I couldn't really feel what I felt about it was, I think it captured the size of the event. And at the end, regardless of how it got there, the overwhelming feeling of what happened at Saipan is like, it's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad that that happened, that all blew up in a way that couldn't wait until, like, I think we all accept that Roy Keane would rather that didn't have happened.
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Ireland
for
would have rather that didn't happen. Yeah. Mick McCarthy would have rather that didn't happen.
And nobody won.
Like, so when you're watching him kind of back at home and all, it becomes a little bit hard to film because it's all very famous pictures from that point on.
Yeah, yeah.
But they recreate them. And it's just this feeling of kind of like, this is just a sad bloody story. More than all the drama, it's just a sad story. And that's how I kind of felt leaving the cinema. So for that point alone, there are going to be people who are coming to this new, and certainly not with the amount of knowledge that me and you might have, or a lot of our listeners to Off the Ball. If you're not a sports fan, you know about Saipan, but you might not know every intricate detail. I think they might have got it okay, actually.
Yeah, you see, I have a problem. I have an issue with the biopic in general.
Okay,
I just don't. I never. It's even funny. Thing was on the other day. There was Summer Over Christmas. The Elvis one was on. And watched a little bit of it. And obviously it was very Baz Luhrmann-esque.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of cool to kind of do it from that way when you kind of, you know, you kind of like just, not that he was, I'm sure there was plenty of fact and fiction in there, but just kind of going extreme with it. And, you know, and that's kind of fine. I don't mind that as a thing. But I don't know what they're for. It almost, it does feel like whatever way you want to sell this and whatever way you want to do it, or they want to do it, like there's a reason that the overlap use basically whatever Roy Keane's line was every week as the selling point to their podcast or video every single time.
Yeah.
Whatever he has said is the first thing up. And it's like, okay, so there's a pretty clear indication there that this guy sells. And I just kind of feel like whatever way they're doing this, there's just going to be a bias there. Give me the four thing OJ in America type thing. Yeah. Do it, go mad with it. And like, draw all sorts of conclusions, like is the embodiment of Celtic Tiger Ireland, everything. Go mad with it.
There is a bit of Celtic Tiger in there, all right.
I'd love that type of thing. I'd love someone to take 10 years and go make. Obviously, it does cost money. But like, it's just because there's such a rich reservoir of stuff there. But like, I don't know. Like, you're probably spot on with the Michael Collins thing. Like, you probably have to be so far removed from it, I find, to enjoy those films. Like, I don't mind.
You didn't watch the Bob Dylan.
No, it'd be no point. Yeah. It'd be no point. It'd be the same feeling.
It doesn't make it a bad film, but I do think we're at that point now where it's just these biopics just constantly, and that's the new IP. That's the superheroes are taking a nosedive, and we're going to like Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Elton John, Queen, and they're just music. And then we're on this sort of stuff as well, and it's just like, what's
up? I forget where I heard this, but someone was made a very good point about it, because obviously there's a Michael Jackson one coming out next year. Now, I don't know what that frame that's going to take on. That obviously, I'm sure, will obscure certain details and whatever else. But they kind of, whatever, I was never making this point about the fact that obviously now, because so many of these big companies own the rights of the singer's music, that's like, it doesn't really matter. You're pushing them back into the mainstream, so as streams go up, everything go up, and it's just kind of a way of, the film will make obviously its amount of money, but the music in turn gets a shot through the roof. So it'd be really interesting in the last year or two with the Springsteen one and the Bob Dylan one, and just to see how much more their music's been played as a result of these films, and like, God knows what.
Well, what both of those films did well was they put a lot of bloody music into it.
Yeah.
And they took away the lack of story by a load of really good songs, and you enjoy your time in the cinema.
Yeah, well, that is true.
Watching them, and then you come out and it's like, you do. I went and listened to Bob Dylan for 3 weeks after watching that film. But this doesn't really happen here. But I think what it does is belie the idea of any sports story. Like, Saipan's probably the most dramatic sports story of our lifetime. It's up there anyway.
Gotta be.
Certainly close to our hearts.
Like,
right?
I'm sure Michelle Smith was it?
Yeah, there you go. It's six years earlier, so it's hard for me to kind of put my head in
the same.
And it also unfurled in a much slower time period. Week happened, and then you had a few years after that, you know?
Yeah. Was Keane, because you'll have a better feel for this, I was about 10, 11.
Mm.
And obviously I'm trying to remember, like, so Keane was as central then, or as kind of seismic a figure then as now. Because I do feel then we didn't hear as much from him, obviously. There was kind of probably a more opaque view of his character. Obviously, there were certain things.
He was. He was a bigger, because in Ireland, you mean?
Yeah.
Bigger. We felt like the whole world revolves around him. It was whether he was there or not.
Yeah.
Like, don't forget, that was the campaign where he played his best ever football for Ireland. But certainly in terms of as a central figure, I think, like USA 94, he was unbelievable. But like as that sort of central figure, he'd come back from his injury. Would he have missed the 98 World Cup? No, we wouldn't have. But probably the reason we didn't qualify, because we almost did, and he obviously had his crew shit in the build-up to it.
Yeah.
And he was at his, like, insane best around 2000, 2001, post-treble.
Yeah.
So everything was just about Keane. And then it always was felt like that there was a...
Was there the same...
Oh, by the way, there's an Alex Ferguson cameo on the phone. And I want you to watch the film for that. I'm not going to say any more. I don't want to spoil the entire thing. Talking to Mick Byrne and Mick McCarthy in the car.
Oh, God. What was I going to say to you? But was there as much... What was I thinking? The just obsession with him, say, away from football.
I don't know. I can't remember. I feel like there was. I feel like that happened around that time. But it's hard to remember pre and post Saipan in terms of that stuff. In terms of Roy Keane, the celebrity, as opposed to... And I know you don't mean celebrity, but in terms off the field, Roy... Like, he'd already done prawn sandwiches at that stage, I think.
Yeah, probably.
He'd already had... When was the Vieira fight?
It was a few years later, I suppose.
Was it three or four? Yeah, see, again, it's hard to put it all into a timeline. Anyway, what I was going to say, though, was even though that might be the biggest story of, you know, our lives in terms of sport, it belies any time Martin Tyler or someone like that tells you you couldn't write it in a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
Because, let me tell you, you could. The storylines are not deep enough.
No.
For Hollywood movies. And that's all I'll say.
Yeah, okay. It is, yeah, I it's a shame, but I just think the only way to do that is a really good documentary.
It would be amazing. Have you got all the protagonists, like Last Dance style?
Yeah.
And you got them to actually dig into this and you talk to everybody from the time, plus with archive footage. You could make an amazing doc.
Like, get those tapes off David Connolly.
Well, that's going to be the one that does it, isn't it? Yeah.
Off someone's dog.
There is somebody filming videotape in the camp, but they don't show who it is or they don't say who it is. I think they've kind of suggested it's McAteer, but David Connolly doesn't exist. Kevin Kilbane doesn't exist, sadly. Ireland don't have many people. There's a very small squad of just Jason McAteer, Stephen Reid, Niall Quinn. Steve Staunton is sorted there, but they didn't trust the actor, I think, so his press cover has never seen anything like it in my life. Is a bit off camera. I have to say, though, the one thing I don't agree with everybody else on is I can't have another conversation about Saipan. I could actually talk about it forever.
Oh, I'd love to go. I'd love it to be... I explore it further.
Yeah.
I think there's not been enough done on it.
Right, we'll cancel John Bruin. We'll be back to talk more about Saipan. I might ask John. John's a big Man United man. I'll check whether he's going to watch Saipan when we come back after the break.
Hey everybody, it's Off The Ball's Gerard Gilroy here. Now, before you dive into this podcast, let me tell you that William Hill have decided racing needed a bit of a shake-up. So they brought in the new Racing Bet Builder. It lets you combine multiple picks from the same race into one personalised bet. Basically, more options, more control, and fewer excuses if your mate's bet beats yours. Pick top three finishes, go head-to-head, or call exact positions all in a single bet. It's racing from a new angle, and it's live now with William Hill. Get the app, start building your bet today. It's over 18s only, gamble responsibly. Visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, enjoy the podcast.